All right, so a little while ago, maybe a year, year and a half, possibly, I read a passage. I was incredibly tired. And although I had read it a few times before and understood the meaning of it, it's been something that's been in the back of my head from time to time, just because, I suppose I should say what it's about. It's about myth, meaning a myth, or just the idea of myth, or, at least this passage is in particular. But it's something I think about from time to time, and the stories we tell each other, and the significance of stories, and whether fiction or not, what place they hold in our lives, what function, why they're essential, why they are important, and why we should keep creating fabrications and creatures and fantasy despite the fact that we know they don't exist. That sort of thing. So there are a few reasons why I wanted to read this over again and record it. One is I kind of want to see, maybe this will become a thing where I'll read it every year and see how my voice changes from year to year, because as you get older, you know, it happens. Just to hear, like, the changes and everything. And also to hear the difference in the iteration, or how I utter certain words, or if I catch a different meaning another time around, another year later, in which you can kind of hear it in how it's said. So, yeah, this isn't something that I normally post, so I'm not going to post it to Reddit, but I think I'll probably keep it on my sound blog, or sound blog, definitely not that, it's a bunch of links, soundgasm page. Once again, I am tired. It's been a long weekend, fun, but long weekend. Yeah. So, once again, whether we listen with aloof amusement to the dreamlike mumbo jumbo of some red-eyed witch doctor of the Congo, or read with cultivated rapture thin translations from sonnets of the mystic Lausse, now and again crack the hard nutshell of an argument with Aquinas, or catch suddenly the shining meaning of a bizarre Eskimo fairy tale, it will always be the one shape-shifting yet marvelously constant story that we find, together with a challengingly persistent suggestion of more remaining to be experienced than will ever be known or told. Throughout the inhabited world, in all times and under every circumstance, myths of man have flourished, and they have been the living inspiration of whatever else may have appeared out of the activities of the human body and mind. It would not be too much to say that myth is the secret opening through which the inexhaustible energies of the cosmos pour into the human cultural manifestation. Religions, philosophy, arts, the social forms of primitive and historic man, prime discoveries in science and technology, the very dreams that blister sleep, boil up from the basic magic ring of myth. The wonder is that characteristic efficacy to touch and inspire deep creative centers dwells in the smallest nursery fairy tale as the flavor of the ocean is contained in a droplet of the whole mystery of life within the egg of a flea. For the symbols of mythology are not manufactured. They cannot be ordered, invented, or permanently suppressed. They are spontaneous productions of the psyche, and each bears within it, undamaged, the germ power of its source. What is the secret of the timeless vision? From what profundity the mind does it derive? Why is mythology everywhere the same, beneath its varieties of costume? And what does it teach? Today, many scientists are contributing to the analysis of the riddle. Archaeologists are probing the ruins of Iraq, Honan, Crete, Yucatan. Ethnologists are questioning the Ostiaks of the River Ob and the Boobies of Fernando Po. A generation of Orientalists has recently thrown open to us the sacred writings of the East, as well as the pre-Hebrew sources of our own Holy Writ. And meanwhile, another host of scholars pressing research has begun last century in the field of folk psychology, has been seeking to establish the psychological basis of language, myth, religion, art development, and moral codes. Most remarkable of all, however, are the revelations that have emerged from the mental clinic, the bold and truly epic-making writings of the psychoanalysts are indispensable to any student of mythology. For whatever may be thought of the detailed and sometimes contradictory interpretations of specific cases and problems, Freud, Jung, and their followers have demonstrated irrefutably that the logic, the heroes, and the deeds of myth survive into modern times. In the absence of an effective general mythology, each of us has his private, unrecognized, rudimentary, yet secretly potent pantheon of dream. The latest incarnation of Oedipus, the continued romance of Beauty and the Beast. Stand this avenue on the corner of 42nd Street and 5th Avenue, waiting for the traffic light to change. And as with before, I'm going to skip a little bit in this section and go to the end where I want to finish reading. Probably should have planned this ahead of time. It's been a while since I've actually cracked this open. Let's see. Where did I want to continue? I guess we can continue on the last page. That was the opening and the introduction, and I'm not going to read the entire introduction, so I guess we'll start with the last page of the introduction then. I think that's what I read last time. I probably should check that. All right. Anyway, these last few paragraphs are also something that's always stuck with me, or at least the myth of it, or something that's returned at random moments over the past year. So the story of Ariadne. The daughter of King Minos fell in love with the handsome Theseus the moment she saw him disembark from the boat that had brought the pitiful group of Athenian youths and maidens for the Minotaur. She found a way to talk with him and declared that she would supply a means to help him back out of the labyrinth if he would promise to take her away from Crete with him and make her his wife. The pledge was given. Ariadne turned for help then to the crafty Daedalus, by whose art the labyrinth had been constructed, and Ariadne's mother enabled to give birth to its inhabitants. Daedalus simply presented her with a skein of linen thread, which the visiting hero might fix to the entrance and unwind as he went into the maze. It is, indeed, very little that we need, but lacking that, the adventure into the labyrinth is without hope. The little is close at hand, most curiously, the very scientist who, in the service of the sinful king, was the brain behind the horror of the labyrinth, quite as readily can serve the purposes of freedom. But the hero heart must be at hand. For centuries, Daedalus has represented the type of the artist-scientist, that curiously disinterested, almost diabolic human phenomenon beyond the normal bounds of social judgment, dedicated to the morals not of his time but of his art. He is the hero of the way of thought, single-hearted, courageous, and full of faith that the truth, as he finds it, shall make us free. And so, now we may turn to him, as did Ariadne. The flax for the linen of his thread he had gathered from the fields of the human imagination. Centuries of husbandry, decades of diligent culling, the work of numerous hearts and hands, have gone into the hackling, sorting, and spinning of this tightly twisted yarn. Furthermore, we have not even to risk the adventure alone, for the heroes of all time have gone before us. The labyrinth is thoroughly known. We have only to follow the thread of the hero path. And where we had thought to find an abomination, we shall find a god. Where we had thought to slay another, we shall slay ourselves. Where we had thought to travel outward, we shall come to the center of our own existence. Where we had thought to be alone, we shall be with all the world.